Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Fox's final original series of 2019 offers this question. Can two people make a love connection with a tango, a foxtrot, or hustle, especially if they've never met? The answers emerge from Blurry Dancing, starting Sunday night. Executive producer Mike Yerchuk joins me next in Internet Radio exclusive from Los Angeles. Also on this dance card, a new honor for Zumo, our classic trivia question, and our annual remembrance tribute to the TV notables who departed this year. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of great audiobooks when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 53 degrees at the top of this hour. Welcome on this Friday afternoon after Christmas, the program all about television. Nice to have you all aboard with us. Great guests coming away from L.A., and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, be interactive with us. Here's how you do it. You pick up the phone, you dial this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Shy about the phone, no problem with us. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can catch that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and we have somebody already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect those by using Facebook Timeline. You've got the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Spreaker screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live and connected with you and us. My dear Chuck from Pretty Dancing on Fox joins me on the road from L.A. after these news notes. Various business and entertainment news outlets are reporting a deal by Comcast to take over multi-channel smart TV venture Zumo is close. Both Comcast and Zumo have not responded to these reports this afternoon, and there's no details over how much Comcast will pay to put Zumo in its fold. At the moment, Zumo, which offers 90 ad-supported services through smart sets and connected devices, is owned by Panasonic and Meredith Corp. And ESPN's Monday Night Football, which wrapped up Monday Night Pass, averaged 12.5 million viewers per game. That's up 8% from 2018, and it's also Monday Night Football's best season since 2015. ESPN's weekly NFL game was now and stays cable TV's most watched series. And that is news notes for today. Way back in January, we showcased the first major news show from Fox at the time. It was called The Masked Singer. And boy, what a monumental hit it has turned out to be, based on an overseas format. Second season, doing as well as the first this fall. Well, now Fox is about to end the year with another original that it hopes will be a big one for years to come. It's called 30 Dancing. It's also based on an international format. It stars Jenna Dewan, who currently is the co-star of the new Netflix series Soundtrack, whose executive producer and creator Josh Safran was on this program just this past Monday. Joining us live from Los Angeles on the road is the executive producer and showrunner of 30 Dancing, Mike Yerchuk. Mike, happy holidays to you. Welcome in.
Happy holidays. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Well, it looks like you may have a chance that starting Sunday night, Lightning for Fox and you may strike twice. Masked Singer early in the year, and now 30 Dancing is closing out.
I hope so, yeah. No, we're very excited about it. So December 29th, coming up this Sunday, we're all very hopeful it's going to do as well as we hope.
Talk about how this show started. How did you and everybody at Fox learn about this format, which I understand started in England some time back, and what did it take to bring it over here?
Yeah, it's a successful format in the U.K. From a company called Second Star, and Deborah Sargent, who's an executive producer on the show. You know, her and her team had created the format and did a beautiful job with the show there in the U.K. Rob Wade from Fox saw that, I think knows Deborah from way back, and worked together to bring the show to the U.S. They made a couple little tweaks for the format here. The main one being that, honestly, there's just more dancing. So each person who is dancing, who's being set up on a date, has two potential dates. So they dance with one girl, and then another, and then they get to decide. So that's the main thing, is like there's an actual choice that happens now. And so there's you know, a little bit more jeopardy in that. Otherwise, though, it's very similar to the British format and was brought over pretty quickly. They decided and kind of gave the show a green light in middle of August, and we've been working to get it on the air ever since.
Now, the whole idea of this is that you have two people who have never met. They each get a chance to do a routine, or half a routine, because they have to do it together when they meet. How does that work?
Correct.
How do you first of all get the couples, and then how do you determine what dance they're going to do, who's going to choreograph it, and where they're going to meet, where they're going to end up?
Yeah, I mean, everything is very bespoke to the people we're setting up. Who are looking for love. So, you know, Jenna is basically playing host and matchmaker, and she is helping, you know, 10 singles find love. In the process, each single that we're setting up has two more singles that we're matching with that person. So, you know, for instance, first episode that's coming up this Sunday, we have a gentleman named Octavius, and he's being matched up with two potential women. So he'll learn one half of one dance and one half of the other dance, and each woman learns their half of their dance. And the first time they get together is on location in the middle of Los Angeles, you know, at these beautiful epic locations we've been able to secure for this first season. We're really excited about it. And, yeah, but everything from the music that they're going to be dancing to the choreographers they're choreographing these pieces, to the locations they're dancing at. You know, there was a lot of work and time and effort put into making sure that we're setting these people up for love and really to have the biggest chance for success.
How long does each person have to learn each dance?
It's 4 days, basically, from the time they start with us to the time that they actually step foot out of the location to do the dance for real. So it's pretty jam-packed, you know? Not a lot of time.
Yeah, it has to be. That is, I mean, to learn a dance, having been ballroom dancing in flamenco, to learn a routine in 4 days, much less have it be what could be a turning point in your life, that's a lot of pressure.
It is, and I think the biggest thing to remember is that these people are not professional dancers. So, you know, they're real people, and they're just looking for love, and we've put them in this sort of extraordinary circumstance. And so, yeah, you're seeing people from all walks of life. You know, we have everybody from 21 to 68 years old. It's a really wide age range and a very diverse group of people. And, you know, job-wise, we have everything from you know, nurses to composers to teachers, track and field coaches, like, you know, everybody has real regular jobs. They're normal people and not dancers. And so the idea that they have to learn, you know, a dance in 4 days, and for the people who are really being set up, they have two dances to learn. So, you know, it's twice as much in the same amount of time. And I've been amazed at what they've been able to pull off.
How did you and your production team and Jenna find these people? Did they have to respond to something? Was it some, you know, did you drive by and you found these folks in Buffalo? How did it go?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, the casting team, you know, we do have a casting team, and we put the word out there looking for people, you know, and just sort of generally spoke about the show as this amazing combination of dancing and dating. And so we, once we put the word out, we started fielding submissions, and we got a lot of people sending in tapes, and you know, once we honed in on who the people that we are going to be like really focusing on setting up, then we were able to start matching those people up to those particular, you know, really fine matches for those people. So I think that was like the key, is finding those, you know, over the course of this show, there's 12 people that, you know, we internally kind of call them pickers. And then each picker gets two matches. So it's something that, you know, once you find those people, then you're really trying to find people that are like a good match for them. You know, it's something that we take very seriously, is trying to make this something that people can truly find a connection. You know, we want them to find that instant chemistry on the dance floor, but after that, we want them to find out that, like, oh my God, we have so much in common. And, you know, the people that we set up with each other in our minds are really, truly well matched. And we try to give each person, like, two great options there that sort of speak to different parts of them. You know, you might have for one woman, you might have, like, the bad boy that they kind of go for and all the time, and then the good guy that they should be going for, you know?
Flirty dancing is the program we're talking about. It begins on your local Fox station this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, or immediately after NFL football. It's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then the official premiere is New Year's Night at the same time. Mike Jurczyk is the executive producer and showrunner of the program. He joins us live on the road from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Simon, I'm going to be live from New York. Happy Friday after Christmas to you and all, or if you're celebrating Kwanzaa, happy second day. And, of course, Hanukkah is still going on to all our Jewish listeners. We're happy to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Mike, well, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're back Monday at our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, and joining us will be Nadja Tucker. She was the writer and story editor the last 2 years for the popular sci-fi Superman spinoff Krypton. She also was an episode contributor to the very critically acclaimed WGN America series Underground. She's on the first half hour. We'll talk to her about her exploits in television and her thoughts about diversity in TV going into 2020. And then you'll meet an entrepreneur who has just created a brand new smart TV programming service called Indie Film Hustle. It's all about generating the next generation of filmmakers and TV makers. His name is Alex Ferrari. I think you'll enjoy meeting him. He's the creator and owner of Indie Film Hustle. You'll hear him on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Who are the choreographers that you worked with on this series, and what did you see as the challenge for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were really proud of the team that we were able to put together of choreographers. You know, that was one more sort of tool in Jenna's tool belt, was to be able to find a choreographer that she thought would speak best to that particular person. So, you know, we have a wide variety of sort of styles and personalities for the choreographers themselves. And from that group, we were able to get Travis Wall from So You Think You Can Dance, who's a 2-time Emmy Award winner. Kat Burns, also a 2-time Emmy Award winner from My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Chloe Arnold from the James Corden Late Late Show. We have a couple of people from Dancing with the Stars alumni of, you know, a couple of their pros, Val Schmerkowski, Sharna Burgess, Dominique Kelly, who's another amazing choreographer who has a little bit more of a Broadway vibe, as is Jonathan Reed David. You know, we, like I said, are just really proud of the people that we were able to put together. Tice DiOrio, another Emmy Award winner from So You Think You Can Dance. So I think all of them are amazing in their own right. And I think the biggest challenge that they all faced was, you know, essentially having to work with people who are not professional dancers, number one. Number two, they're only teaching somebody half of their dance. So, you know, it's difficult to sort of make sure that each half has the entire dance down enough that they can come together and pull this off, having never actually really danced with that person before. You know, it's like they work with the choreographer and their assistants to get all the movement and placement down. But when they do it for real for the very first time, they've never met that person. They don't know anything about them. They don't, you know, they don't know their names, nothing. And they have to step into this dance and see if they have chemistry, you know, see how that feels dancing with that person. So it was tough on the choreographers, but I think everybody did a beautiful job. Really excited for everybody to see the work.
How did the choreographers, Mike, find a way to teach these people in such a short time, not only the dance, but also to be with a partner which is a real key, no matter what type of dance you're doing, whether it's freestyle or tango or foxtrot or whatever, but also to improvise with them, because they don't know how they're going to attract, how they're going to do the dance. They don't know, you know, what their skill level is. So how do the choreographers work through that to put the person at ease and also make sure they get the steps down?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that our choreographers, you know, they're all pros, and a lot of people have said, you know, they work with actors a lot as well. They're not just, you know, when you work with actors, a lot of people assume that actors can dance too, but they're not. They're, you know what I mean? They're not professional dancers either. So I think on some level, they were a little familiar with having to work with non-pros, but it's still obviously easier when you have somebody who has that skill set and that shorthand to do things quickly. So I think there's just a little bit more hand-holding in this sort of case. And I think the other thing that they did a great job with is sort of customizing the choreography. You know, they might come in with one idea or one sort of set routine in their minds, and then when they actually try it out on these people and they see what they're capable of, they can sort of amp it up or tone it down based on their skill set and what they're able to do and what they're comfortable with. So, you know, some of it is pushing somebody out of their comfort zone and getting them to be comfortable in a lift or a trust fall or, you know, whatever the movement is and demands of them. It could be advantageous that they push them out of their comfort level a little bit, or it could be better for that person that they say, you know what, let's dial this back a little bit to something that is going to make you more comfortable and more present in that moment. You know, you don't want somebody doing something that they're concentrating so hard on the dance now that they're not able to kind of really live in the moment and sort of do what we're aiming to do, which is make this a date, you know. I think at the end of the day, they're dancing, but we look at these as blind dates, truly. So I think that's the key, is trying to find that balance and strike that balance for these people and really just customize everything to them.
The other thing, too, is that all of these people have to deal with location, location, location. I saw in the trailer you have couples dancing between columns of like proscenium. Building, I think there's one couple that is dancing on an up escalator would look like a shopping mall. So number one, how do you pick the locations that are suitable for each date? And secondly, how does the choreographer work with location? Do the contestants or the participants deal with the location beforehand, or they just have, or do they get any special hand holding if they're doing it for the first time there?
Yeah, so they do. I mean, basically, location-wise themselves, you know, just to speak on that for a moment, we're doing this obviously all in Los Angeles at the moment. I think the hope is if this show gets picked up and moved on, we can start going further out and do this all over the country. But we really, being here in L.A., wanted to make it a little bit of a love letter to Los Angeles, and all the locations that were chosen were done so because we feel like they're epic, beautiful places to have a first date. I think, you know, I wanted to make sure that everything felt like it had romance to it, you know, something that would feel like what an incredible place to meet somebody for the first time, and also just spoke to sort of the grandeur and iconic locations that LA has to offer. So, you know, we have in this first season some pretty amazing places. LACMA, which, you know, is such an incredible, beautiful art museum here in Los Angeles and has the Urban Light installation out front. You know, we were also able to start one of the dances from outside the museum and end inside in front of Robert Irwin's Miracle Mile art piece. We did a dance at the end of the Santa Monica Pier, you know, which is just beautiful and one of the most, like, you know, visited places in Los Angeles from people who come in from around the country. We also did another dance in the amusement center there at Pacific Park, which, you know, has all the Ferris wheel and the rides and amusements, and so, you know, two distinct flavors. We get two dances out of every location that we're in, so it was important to find locations that allowed us to do that as well. You know, we did a dance at the Los Angeles Theater. We did one, they have this incredible lobby and this beautiful staircase there. And then we did another one inside in the theater on the stage. So every location, you know, we did Grand Park in downtown Los Angeles. We did the Calamigos Ranch in Malibu. We did the historic Pico House and the gazebo there in Alvera Street in downtown Los Angeles. Every location that we did, I think, has a different flavor, a different vibe, offered a different backdrop that worked for those particular people. So very excited about the list of locations that we got. And then as far as the choreographers and dancers working in those spaces, they work in rehearsal rooms, you know, but the choreographers then went out and time those dances to work in those spaces, and then just before we do the dance, we bring each person out separately to see the space and rehearse in that environment so they get a feel for the space, and then we bring the other, you know, then we take that person away, hide them away. It's all very secretive, and then we bring the other person in, and they do their half of the dance, and so it's something so that they both get a feel for the environment that they're going to be in, and that doesn't come as a shock to them, and they're not sort of taken off guard in the moment. And then they come together truly for the first time.
Yeah. It sounds like, Mike, La La Land was an inspiration, at least in the back of some of people's minds.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard to not be inspired by La La Land. It's such a beautiful, incredible film. And absolutely, when you're combining dating and dancing in Los Angeles, it's hard to not think of La La Land. I think it's something that, you know, is of course inspiring and is a little bit of a wink and a nod to that. But we also, you know, have our own cinematic vibe that we want to put on it as well.
You're Mike Yurchuk. He is an executive producer and showrunner of Flirty Dancing, the brand-new Fox series that premieres this Sunday night at Grand Prix Football, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, in the local Fox station, and also the official premiere New Year's night at that very same hour. He joins us live on the road from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. And if you have a question or comment in our many moments with him, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. When we come today on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll help open up 2020, the brand new decade, with Laura Smith, his nurse. She is the creator and executive producer of the new Netflix hit The Witcher, starring Henry Cavill. That's the creator and executive producer of The Witcher on Netflix, Laura Smith, his nurse. She joins us live a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We all know how great Jenna Wan is as a dancer. We also know she's great as a host. We saw her in World of Dance for several seasons. What were the ground rules for her in terms of working with her and in terms of making the contestants at ease with themselves first before meeting each other?
Ground rules, I don't know. I think it's more just Jenna's been amazing throughout this whole process and just so gung-ho and game to help these people find love. I mean, I think in her life, you know, she knows firsthand that you can find love on the dance floor. And truly is invested in this process. I mean, she's been, you know, a part of the show every step of the way, and I think just in terms of investing in these people and making them feel at ease, like, you know, every single episode you'll see, she sits down with them before we even get started with the rehearsals, and, you know, she's well aware of what their stories are and has already helped in terms of pairing them up with potential matches, and so, you know, she sits down, she gets to know them, she really, truly wants each person to have the best experience and get the most out of it, and so I think she does that, and then the, you know, really nice part is that she's a dancer herself, so when we get into the rehearsal room, she understands that language, she can work with the choreographers as well to kind of, you know, help these people feel at ease you know, she obviously remembers that they're not professional dancers, so she lent her experience and expertise there. So it's been awesome to watch, you know, her get to be invested throughout the whole process from these people sort of just starting off on day one and where they end up with on dance day is pretty incredible.
Time before I let you go, what kind of experience has it been like for you to do a program like this where you are bringing people together, you're sort of giving people, in a way, a gift of self-expression through dance for them to know each other and, who knows, maybe make that love connection?
Yeah, honestly, it's been amazing and an honor to work on this show. I feel like I always try to, whatever I do, to make it something that is feel-good television, and I've been very lucky in my career to be able to make those kind of shows. And this one in particular is just so joyous and so feel-good. It's such a sweet show. It's not, you know, a competition show that vies people against each other in any sort of way like that. I mean, there's a little bit of fun competition that comes along with, like, who are they going to choose? But at the end of the day, you know, it feels like a romantic comedy, you know, and that's what we aim to do, is just take people out of their everyday lives and challenge them. And then for the audience, the same. Take them out of you know, thinking about their daily grind and give them something they can just escape in and sort of hop into our world for a moment. And I feel like we've truly been able to give a feel-good show to America, and I'm excited for everybody to see it. I really am.
I'll tell you, I've seen the trailer, and I think it's going to be a wonderful show. It's nice to see people get an opportunity to meet each other, and who knows what kind of relationships they'll come up with. Plus, if you have the opportunity to have their 15 seconds of being Donald O'Connor or Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire or Ella Powell or Vera Ellen or Leslie Caron or Sid Charisse, as for those who know those great dance stars of yesteryear on film and television.
Of course,
it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Absolutely. I can't wait for everybody to watch. Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
I was saying, same here as well. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and who knows what kind of connections could come out of it. And not only, by the way, when you watch it, folks, it's not about the steps only. It's about who they're being in the matter. Absolutely. The show is called Furry Dancing, and it premieres on your local Fox station this Sunday night after NFL football, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, and the official premiere is a few days afterward, New Year's night, at the very same hour. Check your local list for the Fox station in your area, and for more details about the program online, Fox.com, that's www.fox.com. Furry Dancing with Janet Wan this Sunday, 8 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, after NFL football in your area. Mike Church, the executive producer and showrunner, thank you so much for joining us, taking the time out on the road in L.A. Good luck with you, Jenna, everybody involved in the series. Hopefully it'll be a long run, and hopefully a lot of great relationships coming out of it as well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Have a great day.
You too, and a wonderful rest of your holiday year, and a wonderful new year ahead.
You too. Happy holidays. Thanks so much. Take care.
You're welcome, Mike. Take care. Mike Gerson, executive producer and showrunner of Furry Dancing on Fox, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, there's still time in this 2019 to give you or someone you know a wonderful gift that can last them through 2020, the next decade, and the rest of their lives. It's the gift of great sound, the sound that can help them transform the way they hear the world. And how do you do that? A wonderful 3 audiobook trial run of Audible.com. So simple. And that trial run, by the way, can include a wonderful book by Lisa Tapp Status that's doing very well around the country. It's called 3 Women. Very interesting story, great reading, and also great sound, too. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 8,000 titles to choose from. Remember, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. 3 free audiobooks, 2 of them from the growing collection of Audible Originals. That includes original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway original theater from around the country, and great one-woman and one-man shows. And don't forget, you get a one-month trial and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. So, as a great gift for you, or someone you know this year and decade and life ahead, give them the opportunity to hear what can transform the way they hear the world. A wonderful trial run of Audible.com. audibletrial.com for all details, audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in the next half hour, our annual tribute to Modern Televised Remembers, where we pay honor to the people behind the TV camera who passed away this year. Plus, our classic trivia question of the week. It all happens after we pause at the bottom of the at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com, 135 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR and Speaker, your home for Paragon Radio tonight. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific is Paragon Radio, entertainment and more. Tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Paragon Radio, only on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. I want to welcome those of you just joining us on a regular time period at the top of the hour. In case you're wondering, because our guest, Mike Yurchuk from Flirty Dancing on Fox, had to be with us a half hour earlier than originally we thought, we made the time period to start a half hour earlier, and that's why if you're coming in late, you missed out on the interview. But don't worry, we will, as soon as we're done this half hour, we'll put the program on podcast. You'll hear it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or at iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast. Now, we'll have a random brain activity into our chat room. You have a question or comment, put in the room, or call us in, 646-652-2906. It's that time again. It's time, usually on our next to last, the last episode of the year, to make a tribute, to raise a toast, to celebrate the men and women in front of and behind the television camera who passed away this year. Our inspiration is a long-running featurette that runs every year around this time on Turner Classic Movies called TCM Remembers. It's always done to a wonderful, wistful, melancholy tune. The photography is gorgeous, and it's the most comprehensive obituary of an annual event of its kind. In fact, I always say that the people who do that every year, who never get the credit for it and should be doing the Oscars, the Emmys, all the award ceremonies where they do their in memoriam segments. That's how great and comprehensive it is. And it's also the ability to, if anybody else passes away of note, while the feature runs, they're able to react as quickly as possible. We've been doing this now for about, I think, 6 or 7 years, and it's one that we always, I think, really come to the table with. We're trying to be as comprehensive as possible. If we miss anybody, we'd love to hear from you. And if we do, either by phone, chat room, or email, we'll try to get them in on our last episode of the year this coming Monday. So, without further ado, here is our 2019 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And by the way, Random Brain Activity is a first-time listener. Thank you for doing that. And let me hear your thoughts about this, by the way. So, feel free to put it in the chat room or give us a call. So once again, here is the 2019 edition of Tomorrow We Televised Remembers. As always, we start with the people behind the television camera. In the 1960s and 70s, Michel Legrand was one of the great composers. You can always count on him for a lush, unique score on films like The Thomas Crown Affair or Ice Station Zebra or The Go-Between or a wonderful remake of Wuthering Heights, which the music was one of the highlights. In terms of television, it took for one score to get him TV memorabilia, to make him a TV memory. The score was Brian's Song, probably the highest-rated made-for-TV movie ever on ABC. That, of course, the film about Gale Sayers, the great Chicago Bears running back, and his friendship with the late Brian Piccolo, who died of cancer. It's a wonderful score and a great movie, still is, many, many decades later. John Singleton, of course, very big in film with Boys in the Hood and Poetic Justice. But he also made his mark on television, first directing episodes of shows like Empire in recent years, and then the last few years, creating an excellent show for FX about the cocaine train in Los Angeles, Snowfall. In the 1960s, Larry Cohen created two shows that both ran a year and a half, same time frame, first on NBC, a western called Branded, starring Chuck Connors in one of his best roles as an Army person who is booted from the Army for cowardice. And then Roy Finnis played David Vincent, the architect who found flying saucers not far from where he lived and tried to tell everybody about it he could in The Invaders. Richard Williams was one of the great animators from England, and he made his mark in America with a fantastic half-hour cartoon special based on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol with Ebenezer Scrooge in the role, the great British actor Alistair Sim. If you ever saw that program, it was a masterpiece of animation television. He won the Emmy Award for it in the early 1970s. James Foley was a terrific comedy director, but first before he did film, he did The Monkees. He was the major director on that program for 2 years on NBC, and of course directed those many music video-like segments. You could say he was probably one of the grandmasters of the music video through that show. Andre Previn was a great film composer, a great film conductor, but he also made his mark on television on PBS for several seasons as the host and the principal conductor with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra of the Sunday night series Previn and the Pittsburgh. Herman Wouk, great author, wrote The Caine Mutiny, terrific movie in the 50s with Humphrey Bogart and an all-star cast, and then he wrote the books that later became the longest-running miniseries in the history of television, The Winds of War and its sequel, War and Remembrance, produced and directed by Dan Curtis. When it comes to an art form, one of the very special ones in television is the opening title. And nobody did it better or in a more unique way than Wayne Fitzgerald. He did some of the opening titles of some of the greatest movies you never thought he would do in, like Bonnie and Clyde and a number of others. He also did a great work on TV series for Universal Television, like Quincy. Remember the cue and the opening sequence where Jack Klugman introduces people to the world of Frederick Lindsay and they all drop down and faint when they see the body? That was Wayne Fitzgerald's work. He won an award, a Primetime Emmy, for his work on The Bronx Zoo, that's the Edward Asner high school drama, but he also became known for daytime drama's most unique videotape titles. One of them, one of my favorites, was 1990's Introduction to the Guiding Light. He won a daytime Emmy for that. He did three of them, as a matter of fact, two for Guiding Light, one for The Bold and the Beautiful. When home shopping came into being in the mid-1980s, Bud Paxton was one of the key founders with Home Shopping Club and then Home Shopping Network. The other was Joseph Siegel, the former head of Franklin Mint. He founded QVC, standing for Quality, Value, and Convenience. And he stayed with it for a very long time, up until the 2010s. Steve Gorin founded a company called Propaganda Films, which produced some of the best films of our generation. And then 10 years ago, he launched a production company called Anonymous Content, which 4 years ago produced what I think is one of the great television series of this decade, Mr. Robot, which wrapped up this past Sunday in a great two-hour finale on USA Network. He was one of the executive producers of that show. He greenlighted it. He got it on USA. He died early this year. And Anonymous Content, by the way, has continued to do some marvelous television work and will continue under exclusive arrangements with Paramount Pictures. And finally, if you are a fan of ESPN or A&E or Lifetime, I know somebody should thank Herb Gratton. We did a whole salute on him about a month and a half ago. Herb was one of the best cable executives around. He was one of the most foresightful. He helped get ABC make the deal to get most of ESPN. And then, of course, he helped form the Arts Entertainment Network, which later became A&E, and Lifetime, which came out of Cable Health Network. He, too, also passed this year. By the way, Random Brain Activity, our chat room, does remember Brandon. It was a terrific show, and he still remembers that opening tune by Dominic Frontier and Alan Ash, where although one man died down at Bitter Creek, and they say he ran away. By the way, some of the Brand episodes are available on YouTube, and they're excellent. And Larry Cohen, as I mentioned, created that show before he created The Invaders. He also says, Random Brain Activity, that he used to binge and watch Mr. Robot. I thought they had a fantastic final season. And again, Steve Gorin was one of the key people at Anonymous Content that made that show happen, along with Robbie Mallet, Sam Esmail, Christian Slater, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now time for the people in front of the camera. And boy, a lot of very, very influential people in front of the camera who made a lot of TV shows memorable, starting with Bill Macy. If for only one role, you recognize Bill as the henpecked husband of B. Arthur on Maud. You remember, God Will Get You Fat Walter? That's who she was talking to, Bill Macy. He was a wonderful actor. So was Jan Michael Vincent. Many people first saw him on another ABC movie of the week called Tribes, written by Tracy Keenan Wynn, Keenan Wynn's son, directed by the great Joseph Sargent, maybe the best made-for-TV movie director ever, and it won an Emmy Award for Tracy Keenan's script. Vincent was nominated for his performance, and so was Joseph Sargent for directing. Vincent later went on to star in the CBS adventure series Airwolf, later went on to USA. Richard Irving was a popular character actor on many a television show. Some of you may remember him from a Twilight Zone episode called A Kind of Stopwatch. Remember the performance he did. So many in television. Robert Forster. He later became a great film actor after a while with his Oscar-nominated performance in Jackie Brown. But first, he made his mark on television, starring in two series in the 1970s, the Quinn Martin 1930s private eye venture Banyan and Nakia, which played a Navajo cop in the Southwest. Both ran a year. Remember Denise Nicholson? You may remember if you were Fox Shadows fan, you certainly do, one of the kids on that show. And, of course, you then know her from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. She played the child that blew up like a blueberry in that Oompa Loompa musical number. That was Denise Nicholson. But she starred on television first. Renee Auberjonois, great comedian, came from the stage, did a lot of memorable roles in supporting on television, including a co-supporting role on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I believe at one point, Renee worked with another terrific TV star, Katherine Hellman. She was the star of Soap, and then the co-star of Who's the Boss, both long-running favorites on ABC. David Hedison, if you saw The Fly recently on Turner Classic Movies, he was known as Al Hedison then, but then David got to television first with Five Fingers, short-lived series based on the movie, and then his most famous role as second-in-command to the Sea Dew, the sub against Richard Basehart on Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Luke Perry, so the James Dean of the 1990s through Beverly Hills 90210, and then, of course, was on the remake of that show on the CW. He died earlier this year. Wonderful performer, started as a dancer, then became a terrific actress. First on the stage on Sony Theater, the Paul Stills off-Broadway, then Broadway, and then for one season on television on the ABC stations. But, of course, her lasting fame was as Valerie Hopper playing Rhoda on the Mary Tyler Moore Show and then her own series in the 1970s. Also was in her own program, Valerie, which later became the Hogan Family when she opted out. Wonderful actress, and also beat the odds when it came to her illness for many, many years. A lot of people thought she would die earlier. She didn't. She beat the odds. And that's a great tribute to her. And in the 1960s, another popular comedy that ran a few years was McHale's Navy. Ernest Borgnine was the star. Tim Conway was the co-star. He was such a delight in that role. But then he became one of the regular cast members on the Carol Burnett Show. And for nearly a decade, he and Harvey Korman would crack each other up. And in the process, they crack us up a lot. Brett Thorne started as a dramatic actor in film, but then later in his career became the foil of Gary Shandling as a talk show host producer in The Larry Sanders Show. When AMC started in the 1980s, there was a host. His name was Bob Dorion. And AMC at the time was all movies, classic movies from mostly the RKO library. And just like Robert, his counterpart Turner Classic Movies, Robert Osborne, Bob Dorion was all class, a lot of fun, and always enjoyed. And he got the sense that he and his fellow AMC host Nick Clooney always enjoyed their job. He passed away earlier today. What Jim McKay was to ABC's Wide World of Sports, Jack Whitaker was to CBS and then ABC. Jack Whitaker was the person who could always set you up powerfully for a sports event, whether it was the Super Bowl, the Masters Golf Tournament, or the Triple Crown of horse racing. And he became television's first and greatest sports essayist. He later covered the Olympics for ABC. Jack Whitaker was one of the classiest sports people around, and he could make any sports event even better just for his presence. Peggy Lipton, one of the Mod Squad in the late 1960s, early 1970s, under Aaron Spelling for that memorable ABC series, then later one of the key co-stars of Twin Peaks. Ron Liebman, you know him maybe for Norma Rae, where he paid the union boss that got Sally Field going, but in the early 1970s, he was Kaz, a former prisoner who became a top-notch corporate lawyer. Ron Liebman played that role. He played it perfection. He won an Emmy Award, Best Actor in Drama for that CBS series, but only ran 1 year. And Liebman later on made a return to television in a host supporting role for programs like Law & Order. In the early 1960s, Diane Carroll was one of the top musical stars on variety shows. And then in 1968, Hal Cantor, the great creator writer, decided to use her as the first African-American woman in a comedy series, Julia. It was a wonderful program. I grew up watching it. She gave a magnificent performance. It was a lot of fun. She was a great foil to Lloyd Nolan, playing a nurse in his department. And then, of course, there was that child, Mark Coppage, and his friend, Earl J. Wagadorn. I'm happy to say that many of the Julia episodes are now available on YouTube, and if you've never caught that show, you ought to. It was really a groundbreaking show in the world of situation comedy, and Diane Carroll's performance made it happen. Then there was Chi. That's right, Chi Bravo, the sidekick of Chelsea Lady, who passed away a week or so ago. He was a terrific force on that show. And speaking of forces, how about the man who played Big Bird for so many decades on Sesame Street, Carol Spinney, who passed away a few weeks ago. There was William Wintersall, very popular soap opera star, first of the Young and Restless, then General Hospital. Oh, speaking of iconic people, how about Karen Pendleton? But you know her best alongside Covey O'Brien as two of the long-running stars of the Mickey Mouse Club. You always had a lump in your heart when they had to say goodbye and sing, "Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company." Karen lived a great life after her 4 years on the Mickey Mouse Club alongside Covey and all those Mouseketeers and Jimmy and Roy and so forth. She lived a great life, and we miss her too. One of the great child icons of early television. Kay Ballard, wonderful talent on stage, on film, but I remember her most for a wonderful two-season role opposite Eve Arden in The Mothers-in-Law. Sunday nights at 8:30 on NBC was so much fun watching her go, "Wee!" She was just a wonderful talent. When it comes to cooking, nobody could do it like Carl Ruiz. We first met him on Diners, Drive-In Dives. He was a discovery of Guy Fieri, and then he became a regular on such shows as Guy's Grocery Games and other Food Network competition shows. He passed away recently. He was a wonderful chef, always had wonderful talent, and also a great attitude when it comes to cooking and judging. Cameron Boyce, a star in the making. You first saw him on the Disney Channel with Jesse, and he was also in the Descendants movies. He was really talented. He passed away suddenly this summer. He was a wonderful talent, and goodness knows where he could have gone past his roles with Disney Channel. All of you know Dog the Bounty Hunter, and you know that beside Dog, there was Beth Chapman at his side. And she was on when WGN America revived that series under Dog's Most Wanted earlier this year. Beth was there right up to the very end. She contracted cancer, and she passed away earlier this year while that show, by the way, was still in production. Dog realizes that to his work would not have been the work he did so successfully as a bounty hunter without Beth by his side. I first saw Suzanne Wang as a correspondent on the syndicated series Fox After Breakfast that got Tom Bergeron into national fame. Suzanne Wang could handle anything coming her way as a roving reporter, and then she became known as a comedian. She did all sorts of different TV shows. I think she would have been a wonderful game show host, by the way, but she later became a very big host on the popular Home and Garden television series, the long-running one, House Hunters. And even when she was taken off on camera, she still had her voice go off camera and provided many episodes with some great, great things. Suzanne passed away this year. And for all the Dallas fans, another one of the great co-stars passed away this year, too, Ken Kercheval, one of J.R.'s foils. Always did a great job on that show. When it comes to peppy people, nobody could be as peppy and fun doing it as Georgia Engel. Did it on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, did it in appearance on Love Boat, Fantasy Island. Whatever she was on, she always had a bright face to match. She was really one, I think, by the way, if she was around the 1950s, she would have been a fantastic musical comedy star. But Georgia Engel really did her thing on television and did it very well. Remember the Munsters? Remember the first person who played Marilyn, the straight person of the group? That was Beverly Owen. She was there for the first half of season one, then later gave the role over to Pat Priest. Beverly did pretty good post-Munsters in her lifetime. She passed away earlier this year, too. I mentioned the monkeys when I talked about James Spader, the director. One of the monkeys, one of those four, that Fab Four passed away this year, Peter Tork. Always a lot of fun to watch him. He was sort of the unusual one, if you will. Never played it straight, but always played it great. Peter Tork. And by the way, an excellent musician, too. On VH1 on Saturdays, they play a show called Cheaters. It's a syndicated show. It's a controversial program. And one of his hosts passed away suddenly this year, Clark Gable, who's done the last few seasons. Yes, he is the grandson of the great actor, Clark Gable. And finally, one of the groundbreaking soap opera stars, daytime drama stars, passed away this year. He was a marvelous actor. I wish he could have done more beyond daytime television. Christoph St. John. He and his girlfriends on that show were wonderful couples, and Christoph was a master of terrific acting. I think he could have been a great primetime show lead in any show he wanted to do. But Christoph St. John passed away this year. And finally, one of the great superstars of film passed away, Doris Day. Why do we mention her? Because in the 1970s, she was a television fixture. She was on Monday nights the same night as Lucille Ball was with the Doris Day Show. She tried to be the Lucille Ball of that decade. Show ran 5 years, had a lot of production problems, some format problems too. But with it all, Doris Day did her thing and did it well and always sang, "Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be." The kind of attitude that I think really epitomized her life and her career. And I also mentioned Doris Day for another reason. because she also, in her own way, put an issue front and center in front of people. In the early 1980s, she started a series about pets, one of her other loves, on the Family Channel. And it was on one of those episodes that her lifelong friend, Rock Hudson, appeared. He had a memorable press conference to announce that episode, and it was there that Rock Hudson, and we all learned, that he was the first major film superstar to contract AIDS. But no matter what, Doris Day stood by Rock Hudson, had him on, his biographer saying, no, you can't do it. He's bad, damaged goods, but he had him on. And as a result, it put a human face, a very important human face, on the subject of being HIV positive and having AIDS. And now decades later, thanks to Doris Day, and thanks to Lady Rock Hudson, we are controlling AIDS. The cure is not there yet, but more and more people are living a lot longer than they did back in the early 1980s because of the treatments that have been developed, thanks to medical research, and thanks to people like Doris Day in having AIDS become out of the closet and become a problem we all of us should be dealing with. And that's why we have her as our final part of Tomorrow We Televise Remembers. Whatever will be, will be. To all those people who I've mentioned over the last few minutes, thank you for the contribution you made to television. Whatever it was, how big or small, in front of the camera, in front of all of us behind the camera, it all made a difference. And we salute you. Random Brain Activity has been in our chat room for this entire segment, and here's what he has to say. It always astonishes me how many artists pass away each season. And by the way, we have another person that we want to add to that list behind the scenes. I should have recognized it, but thank you, Random Brain, for doing so. And that is the great Star Trek and science fiction writer, D.C. Dorothy Fontana. She was one of the first female science fiction writers on television. In fact, she was one of the first female writers in television to make a move and make the medium happen. And that was thanks to a Western series called The Tall Man, which was produced by Universal Television and MCA TV. And also thanks to Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, who took her on as a writer for the series he did before Star Trek, Lieutenant. So, Random Brain Activity, thank you so much for that that missing. I really appreciate it. So we want to also honor D.C. Fontana as well. As I said, we try to make this as comprehensive as possible. I thank all of you for listening to it. And if there's anybody like D.C. Fontana that we missed, please let me know. Email me, find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and we will have that person recognized on Monday's Tomorrow We Televise episode. Now it's time for our traffic trivia question of the week. We've been showcasing this question since a week ago Monday. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win the book Identify Yourself, A Journey in Your Creative Courage by Night Flight creator and former TWBT guest Stuart Shapiro, who was on earlier this year. Here's the question. December Bride was the great actor Harry Morgan's first TV series as a co-star. What was his last? Some clues. It was in the mid-1980s. His role was part of a great Broadway play and Oscar-winning movie of the 1930s. In the movie version of the play, Lionel Barrymore played his role, and Frank Capra directed the film. What was that series? Well, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win. Identify yourself by Stuart S. Shapiro. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question first thing tomorrow and if need be throughout the weekend at our Facebook page and also at Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. So remember, we'd like to hear from you. In order to win, you got to be in. So get your entry in. And by the way, if you have won before and you're listening to our show, let somebody else win. We're looking for our third winner in the last 4 weeks, and I'd love to end 2019 with at least one more winner. So that could be you. In order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. Again, I want to thank Mike Yumchuk from Blurry Dancing on Fox for joining us. He was on the road in his car driving to parts between parts of Los Angeles. So thank you again, Mike, for being with us. If you missed the interview that we did because we were on a half hour earlier, I want to remind you that Flirty Dancing is on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on your local Fox station. For some stage, it'll be on immediately after NFL football coverage. And then the official opening is New Year's night at the very same hour. And also, don't forget that Jenna Dewan, the host of the show, you can also see her as a co-star of the brand new Netflix series Soundtrack, which is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. As you missed our interview on Monday with the creator and executive producer of the program, Josh Sheffrin, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. So thank you again, Mike, for being on the program. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Coming up on our show Monday, we're back in our regular time period, previous New Pacific, and we will have the writer story editor for the last 2 years of sci-fi series Krypton, and also a writer on the critically acclaimed WGN America program Underground, Nadria Tucker. We'll get her thoughts about where diversity on TV is going in this year and decade ahead. And finally, the creator and owner of the new smart TV programming service, Indie Film Hustle, Alex Ferrari. Could that service be the stepping stone for the next generation of TV makers? We'll ask Alex all about that. And don't forget, 1 week from today, we will have Lauren Schmidt Hisrich, the creator executive producer of the new Netflix hit, The Witcher. If you came in late on today's program, or you want to catch up an episode to this, any of our episodes throughout the year, well, go to www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, this weekend you can check out any or all of our episodes of 2019 as a podcast. It's available on iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, and of course the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you go to that network, it's iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in. We'd love to hear what you think about the world of television. What's your thoughts about how TV is going to be in 2020 and beyond? Love to hear, so email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Remember, that's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. Also, we have a regular feature we do called The Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? Let me know. If we give it the attention, you get the credit. Again, use that email, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook. And follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's the UBC Simon TWBT. However you communicate, we communicate back. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeart Radio. Our production associate, BTR, is Candace Williams. Annie Toad's Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of Zenify are Alan Levy and Bob Chalish. Tomorrow We Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a trio of great audiobooks makes a wonderful gift to kick off 2020 and the decade to come, audibletrial.com/televised. You won't be sorry. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your holiday, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or something else. Have a great weekend as well. We are back on Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this weekend, including coming back from those you love over the Christmas holiday, please make whatever you're doing safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.